Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on predictions for the rest of 2010 when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Well, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Now, Swinton outraged his colleagues when he replied that, quote, there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it, and I know it, unquote. And he said that in 1880. Now, there's not one of you, he went on to say, who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things than any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals, he said, of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this global 2000 program, the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order, this global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible Prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's educational. It's entertaining. It's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. Hey, back in July, I think it was, it might have been in June, I did a series of programs that were put out by RENSE, RENSE.com, pretty good source of information. Might want to write that down, RENSE.com on the Internet, and it was entitled Predictions for the Rest of 2010, and I did a report. And there were 23 gurus, 23 sources of information, people who are economists. They work for the government or Goldman Sachs, or they're newsletter writers. And they make predictions, and they analyze the news, and they tell you the price of gold is going to go up this year, or the price of silver is going to go down, or the stock market's going to tank, or the stock market's going to go up, and we think that the economy is going to go into overdrive, or we think that the economy is going to collapse, and so on. And most of these guys are pretty negative. The positive people that are predicting the economy, they're on things like Fox News and CBS and ABC and NBC and PBS and so on, like the Larry News Hour, and they're telling you about green shoots and all the positive things that are going on, and unemployment's going down, and they also report that unemployment's going up, but they're the establishment press. And then there's the underground press, and so what I'm citing here is from the underground press, and RENSE is one of those. Spiker's another one, Kitco. And the newsletters, you know, like the International Forecaster and the Privateer and the Money Changer and McIlvaney Report, you know, and the James Stewart, and you know, and on it goes. And these guys are making their predictions also, and sometimes they're pretty specific predictions. You know, they'll say, we expect the stock market in the second half of 2010 to go down to around the 6,000 or 7,000 level. Actually, the stock market, last time I saw a number, was up over 11,000. It's been bouncing around between 11,000 and 11,500. It hasn't recovered up to its all-time high, 14,000 and some change, but it's, you know, it's been up around 11,000 plus, and it's been doing that for most of the year. And so some of these predictions came to pass, and some of these predictions didn't. So I said then, when I made this, I said, I'm going to put this over here on the shelf. And then at the end of the year, when we come up to 2011, which is about where we're at as I speak, then we'll take it down, and then we'll review it and see how many of these predictions that were made in January, February, and March of 2010. Just how good are these underground newsletter prognosticators? And so we'll give them a grade when we get through. Some of them did pretty good, and some of them didn't do so good. So starting off, the very first one, this report now was made on 5/25/10. So all of these predictions were made before June 1st. And some of them have a date on it, and it'll say, Wall Street Journal, February 14th, 2010, and so on. So these go back, to January, February, March, and April, these predictions, and they're trying to foresee the future over here, kind of like a prophet. They're trying to divine the future, trying to predict what's going to happen for the rest of the year. They're not predicting the second coming or anything like that. They're trying to predict what economic events are going to transpire and what political events they expect to come out of them. The first one is Bob Chapman. Now, Bob Chapman puts out the International Forecaster, and then I report on the International Forecaster every so often. And he said, in the first 6 months of 2010, Americans will continue to live in the unreality. The period between July and October is when the financial fireworks will begin. The Fed will act unilaterally for its own survival, irrespective of any political implications. And that source is from an insider at the Federal Reserve meetings. And in the first quarter of the year, we could even see martial law, which is more likely for the first 6 months of 2011. The FDIC will collapse in September of 2010. Commercial real estate is set to implode in 2010. Wall Street believes there is a 100% chance of a crash in the bond market, especially municipal bonds, sometime during 2010. And the dollar will be devalued by the end of 2010. All right, so that's what Bob Chapman had to say at some time prior to June 1st, 2010, and I reported that to you at that time. Now, Bob Chapman made seven predictions. He said that July to October, financial fireworks, the Fed will act on November the he said that the Fed would act in its own interest, irrespective of anybody else. He said martial law is a possibility. The FDIC will collapse. Commercial real estate will collapse. Municipal bonds will collapse. And there will be dollar devaluation. All right. Well, when we take a look at his predictions, he made seven predictions. Out of the seven predictions, two of them were correct, and five of them were in error. The July to October financial fireworks actually occurred on November the 3rd, so he missed that by 3 days, but I gave him credit for it because he said July to October. That would have been July 1st to October 31st, and the Fed announced that they were going to do a quantitative easing program on November the 3rd. So he was only 3 days off. That's not too shabby, so I'm going to give him credit for that. He said there'd be a dollar devaluation. That didn't happen. Municipal bonds would collapse. That didn't happen. Commercial real estate would collapse. That didn't happen. The FDIC will collapse in September. That didn't happen. And martial law would occur. Now, that was a little bit on the iffy side. He said more likely it'll occur in the first 6 months of 2011, but it could occur in the last quarter of 2010. Well, that didn't happen. So we're going to give him 28.5%. 28.5%. For getting the first two correct, and then the other five didn't pan out. Now, I'm going to say this. I think that all seven of those predictions are going to come to pass. So let me tell you what I think the problem is with these people. They're trying to, with specificity, identify the date that this is going to happen. Like, he didn't say that there'd be a dollar devaluation at some point in the future and municipal bonds are going to crash because of the fundamentals in the bond market. He said it's going to happen in the last quarter of 2010, and it didn't happen in the last quarter of 2010, so he's dead wrong. It's going to happen, but we don't know when it's going to happen. And I think that's what the real rub in life is that we don't know. I don't have any connecting link with God, and I don't have a crystal ball. I couldn't tell you. But Meredith Whitney, that's the lady, that blew the whistle on the global financial crisis back in 07 or 06. I forgot what her date was. She said, hey, this thing's going to collapse. And it did. Now, I don't know if Meredith said it's going to collapse in September of 2008 with the failure of Lehman Brothers. I don't know what specificity she had in mind there, but she was right on when she said, hey, this thing's going to blow up in our face. This is global financial system, and it did, and it is, and it's going to continue. Only it's going to get worse. Now, you see, on mainstream press, they're telling you it's going to get better. Just be patient, and you're going to go back to work, and everything's going to work out. Well, Whitney came out the other day, and she said the big thing for 2011 is going to be the municipal bond market, which is $100 billion in the red. See, these municipal bonds, these are tax-free bonds that insurance companies buy. And that's the way they finance, all of the improvements in your city. They put in curbs and gutters and street lights and sewer systems and water systems and so on, build schools, and they do this with what they call municipal bonds. So they put this on the ballot, and you people go out and you vote for these bond issues. So you people vote to put yourselves into debt, and you've been doing this for about the last 100 years, and you've been pretty hot and heavy on it now in the last 50. And every time that your local politician wants to fund something, he doesn't save up the money and then go out and build a public school. And it's kind of like people buying automobiles. You know, they don't sit back and say, well, you know, 3 years from now, I'm going to need a car, so I'm going to save $300 or $400 a month and put it in the bank. And then 3 years from now, when I need to buy this car, I'll have the money and I can go down and pay cash for this car. No. People don't do that. They just live their lives and they spend everything that they've got every minute of every day. And then when they need a car, they go down, they sign on the dotted line, put themselves in debt for the next 3 to 6 years, and then pay it off on monthly payments. Well, that's fine. But then if you ever lose your job, you know, if you ever have any financial problems come up, well, then you can't make your payments, and they come and repossess your car. All right, now we're in that same kettle of fish. California is $20 billion in the red. That's just their current financial problems. See, they've got billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of debt, and their tax revenue is declining. So while they're getting pay cutbacks every month or so, not able to take in enough taxes to meet their obligations, These municipal bonds are about to go into default. And Meredith Whitney says they're short $100 billion for the year 2011, and she thinks that 2011 may be the year. But when I saw her on TV, she didn't say 2011 is the year. She said it may be the year, but it may be 2012 or 2013. But at some point in time, and get this, the same states that are in hock and unable to meet their municipal bond obligation also can't meet their retirement obligation. So it's kind of like a double whammy. And they're underfunded by about the same $100 billion again. That's 20% of a trillion. That's all 50 states. Some states are in better condition than others. You know, some states are really in bad condition. In fact, in Illinois, it is so bad that a little piece on TV the other night that the highway patrol cannot buy gasoline in the gas stations anymore because their credit cards are no good. Isn't that special? Illinois is paying their vendors. They're paying their vendors with warrants and notes. They're not paying them with the money. And so, you know, you're supplying stuff, you know, supplies, you know, it could be food, clothing, buildings, rent, or whatever it is, to the state of Illinois. And then instead of them sending you a check that you can take down cash and pay your bills with, they send you an IOU that says, well, when we get the money, we'll redeem the note. I don't know if they're paying interest on these notes or not, but they've got the people, the business people that are supplying the state strung out. And many of those, if the state doesn't pay them, are going to go upside down. So anyway, that's what's going on. Now, all seven of Bob Chapman's predictions, I think, are right on, but just not for 2010. Now, that's my personal opinion. Now, I avoid my personal opinions here on the program, and I try to stick just with the facts. And I said, well, let's take a look at this in 6 months, and let's see. Well, Bob Chapman, for the last six months of 2010, was 28.5% correct. Now, there's a guy by the name of Gerald Celente, C-E-L-E-N-T-E. He's number two. He made four predictions. He said terrorist attacks and the crash of 2010, 40% devaluation at first, the greatest depression, worse than the Great Depression of the 1930s. Okay, so he predicted terrorist attacks, crash of 2010, 40% devaluation, depression worse than the Great Depression. None of those four things happened in 2010. Are they going to occur? Well, I think we can expect terrorist attacks. I think we can expect a crash of our economy. I think we can expect a 40% devaluation of our currency. And I think we're headed for a depression worse than the Great Depression. But if you were to ask me, well, put a date on that. People do that all the time. They say, well, Mr. Gordon, when do you think the second coming is going to occur? When do you think that this economic disaster is going to occur? And then I guess what they want me to do is say, well, Jesus is coming back on July 9th, 2016, at 3:30 in the afternoon. I guess. I don't know. Last time I took a look in the scripture, Jesus said he didn't know when he was coming back. He was asked, he said, I don't know. He said, there is a guy that knows, it's the Father, and he knows, and he hasn't told me, so I don't know. Now, I don't know about the rest of you people out there, but I don't have any direct contact with the Father or with Jesus. I have an indirect contact called prayer, but I don't have any direct contact. Neither one of them are talking to me, save for an affidavit that I have in the Scripture, so I can read it. Now, the last time I saw the affidavit, it said, I don't know. And my common sense says that if the boss doesn't know, what in hell do the employees know that the boss doesn't? I'm going to rest my case. I don't know. And so when I tell people that, I guess they're disappointed. I'm not quite sure why they should be disappointed. I don't know any more than you do about it. But I can watch the trends, and I can look at history, and I can see what's happened in the past. And when I see other nations that have done what we Americans are doing today, and then I look back in the history books and I say, well, here's what happened in Bolivia when they did that, and so I can expect that that's about what's going to happen to us now that we're doing it. And that's my take on it. And it's been pretty accurate over the last 4,000 or 5,000 years. You know, if you do what the other guy did, you'll probably get the same result that he got. If you got a good result, that's fine. If you got a bad result, that's probably what's going to happen to you. So Gerald Celente, he's right. I think that all four of these events are going to transpire. I don't know when they're going to happen, but we're set for terrorist attacks, crash of 2010. There's a crash coming, but is it coming in 2011? I don't know. Is it coming in 2012? I don't know. Is it coming? I believe it. Why? Well, because we've spent ourselves into insolvency, and every country in the world that's ever done that in the past has had an economic crash, which is then followed by war. We've had two of these wars now, you know, World War I, World War II, I think World War III is in the offing. All right, so now here's the third guy. His name is George Ure, U-R-E, and he made just two predictions. He said markets are going up mid to late summer, then all hell breaks loose from then on through the rest of the year. All right, so his first prediction, markets up mid to late summer, is exactly correct. The stock market's been going up. All the commodity markets are up. Copper's over $4 a pound. Gold has reached its peak. You know, it's hit 1421 one day. It's down around 1375 or 80. It'll probably bounce around there, you know, for another couple, 3 months, and then one day it'll hit 1500. And I've been watching this gold thing over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, and so it goes up 100, and then it sinks back 25. It goes up 150, and then it sinks back 50. It goes up another 100, and it sinks back 25. And then it just kind of trades in a trading range there, you know, for a while. And then it moves up again. Now, as I speak, it's bumping up around 1,400, but they're keeping it below that. It's 1,380, 1,390, 1,370, 1,390, 1,395, 1,380. They're just bouncing around. Now, silver's kind of broken out. It was $17 an ounce here 3 months ago, and I see now it's pushing 30. So the silver has outperformed gold, which is what Franklin Sanders said it was going to do. Remember that? He wrote a book called Why Silver Will Outperform Gold by 400%, and I reported on that to you 2 or 3 times. And so, sure enough, you know, here it comes. Now, I think Sanders is right, and but we don't know when it's going to happen, you know what I mean? And the Achilles heel of all these guys is that they're putting dates on this. Now, if they would stick with their predictions and then wait for the event to transpire, I think that they'd have just about 100% prophetic record. But when you put dates on it and say, this is going to happen now in the last quarter of 2010, or this is going to happen in 2011, or that's going to occur in 2012, you know, I don't know. I'm looking at their records here, and it doesn't look good. Third guy over here, see, so 1, 2, 3, 4. Here's the fourth guy. He also made two predictions. His name is Igor Panarin. He said that in the summer of 1998, based on classified data about the state of the U.S. economy and society supplied to him by fellow FAPSI analysts, Panarin forecast the probable disintegration of the USA into six parts in 2010, at the end of June, start of July 2010, as he specified on 10 December 2000. Now, he's got inside information. This is presumably classified data. I mean, I don't know if he got this from WikiLeaks or if he got this from the CIA or the FBI. I don't know. But I just read you the story. It said, in the summer of 1998, this is, you know, a long time ago, based upon classified data about the state of the U.S. economy and society supplied to him by fellow FAPSI analysts. I don't know what FAPSI is. Doesn't say. Panarin forecast the probable disintegration of the USA into six parts in 2010. In 2010. Okay, did it happen? Probable disintegration into six parts in 2010? No. End of July, start of July? End of June, start of July? No. So he scores zero. He was 100% in error. Is that going to happen? Probably. When? I don't know. And he doesn't either. He thought he knew. And he put a date on it, and then the date was wrong. Is it going to be broken into six parts or 10 parts? See, I heard 10 was the number that I've picked up in the past. This is the first time I've ever heard six regions or six parts. 10 was the number that I've always been clued in on. And when is that going to happen? I don't know. Now, there's an outfit here called Neither Corps, N-E-I-T-H-E-R-C-O-R-P-S. And the Neither Corps people made four predictions here. They have projected that the third and final stage of the economic collapse will begin sometime in 2010. Now, that's the third and final stage of the collapse. Now, barring some kind of financial miracle or the complete dissolution of the Federal Reserve, a snowballing implosion should become visible by the end of the year. The behavior of the Fed, along with that of the IMF, seems to suggest that they are preparing for a focused collapse peaking within weeks or months instead of years, and the most certain fall of the dollar. Okay, so neither corpse made four predictions. They said that the third stage of the collapse begins in 2010. Didn't happen. Snowballing implosion by year end. That didn't happen. Focused collapse peaking in the months, peaking rather in weeks or months, and that didn't happen. And the most certain fall of the dollar, and that didn't happen. In fact, the exact opposite occurred this year. The dollar, which was at 72 or 73 early in the year, actually peaked out at 89 cents. And there's a number of reasons why that happened that way. The Fed was very crafty. They pointed the finger at Greece, and while everybody's eyes were on Greece, it kept everybody's eyes off the United States. Now, I've looked at the financial statements here of the United States versus the PIGS countries. PIGS, that's Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Spain, and Greece, P-I-I-G-S, five countries over there. And the balance sheet of the United States, and you could add in a bunch more, like Great Britain, is worse than Greece, worse than Portugal, worse than Ireland. But we've got the reserve status on our dollar, and our ratings agencies pointed the finger over there at Greece and said, hey, look at these guys over here, they're bankrupt. And then everybody focused on Greece and said, oh my God, yeah, they are bankrupt, and created an economic crisis in Europe. Well, while everybody's eye is on Europe and Greece and now Ireland, nobody's eye is on the United States, you know? Well, that's good thinking. Good thinking. And so, you know, all things being equal, if in fact they hadn't done that, I'm sure that everybody's eye would be on the United States. And that could spell real trouble for us. So they have postponed this. They haven't eliminated. The Fed hasn't paid off any debt, and they haven't balanced any budgets, and they haven't changed any of the fundamental flaws that are in our economy. But they have certainly postponed it from 2010 to 2011 or 2012. They've kicked the ball down the road, and so now we don't need to be concerned about that right this minute. And I guess that's good for our guys over here. That gives us a little bit more time to prepare for this inevitable collapse. Now, what happens here, you remember the story of the little boy that cried wolf? You know, just harkening that back. See, you cry wolf, and everybody comes out, and we're looking for the wolf, and the little kid laughs and says, ha-ha, I'm just having fun. And so this happens two or three times. Pretty soon, when somebody cries wolf, nobody pays attention, and all of a sudden, here's the wolf, and he's eating sheep. Well, that's what's happening here. These prognosticators are crying wolf. They're saying, hey, boy, it's going to happen this year, and it doesn't happen. Hey, it's going to happen, you know, in the next 6 months, and it doesn't happen. And then we all sit around, and we say, well, we've heard this swan song before. So then we don't believe it's going to happen. See? Like, can you remember the Y2K thing back in 1999? They said, oh, my God, the world's going to collapse here because of this computer. So we all went out and we bought food and generators and all that stuff. And when January 1st came, nothing changed. Nothing happened. And so people became disgusted, and they went out and sold their gold and silver and sold their food and their generators and stuff. And so, by God, I'm not going to get swallowed into that again. Hey, wait a minute. Then when the wolf comes, they won't be prepared for it. It isn't that the wolf ain't coming, and it isn't that there aren't wolves out there. It's the timing. You know, these guys are always putting a date on the wolf is coming at 10:45 a.m. on Thursday. And the truth of the matter is there isn't anybody out there that's got a clue as to when the wolf's coming. We know he's out there. We don't know when he's going to come try to kill a sheep, and that's just where reality's at. But for some reason, we just can't resist it. We just have to put dates on it, don't we? And those dates prove to be inevitably wrong. Not the events. And then I'll show you that when we get to the Figge report. You see, Ronald Reagan commissioned a report on the economy, just like President Obama did. And it was called the Grace Commission. And they came back and said, hey, we can balance the budget and we can solve our financial crisis in the 1970s going into the 1980s. And we can solve that. And President Reagan put the kibosh to it when they came back with a positive response. They never balanced the budget, and they kept right on with the spending. The Congress would come up with new spending programs, and they'd raise taxes a dollar, and then they would raise spending a dollar and a quarter, always in deficit, always spending and borrowing more money. Well, there's an inevitable consequence to that. You know, when you max out all of your credit cards, you know you're bankrupt. No, now you can't borrow anymore. So now your standard of living takes a hit. You can't live at the same level that you were living before. Can't burn as much gas. Can't take as many days off work. Can't go as far from home on vacation. Can't buy a new boat this year. That's what it all boils down to. In times past, when your credit was good, you could go out there and you could make $1,000 a month and spend $1,200, and you could do that for a long time, and it became habit forming. Our government did that. You did that. I did that. All of us did. Okay, but now our credit cards are maxed out, and so now here comes payback. And that's what the bottom line is to the global financial crisis. Payback is here. But taint yet. Didn't happen in 2010. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief in the Law Hour. And editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing again a publication called Rents.com, Predictions for the Rest of 2010, put out on 5/25/10. I reported on this about June 1st, or thereabouts, of 2010. These are predictions that were put out by 23 newsletters, economists, investors, stock market gurus, and they said, well, here's what we think is going to happen in the year 2010, or more specifically, in the second half, that is quarter three and quarter four of 2010. And I said at the time, what we'll do, we'll put this up here on the shelf, and then at the end of 2010, we'll pull it down off the shelf, and then we will review. So I spent yesterday going through all of these predictions. There's 137 of them made by 23 of the best conservative gurus in America. 23 of these guys made predictions. They made 137 predictions. I got them all written out, and I categorized them all, and then I did the math, and you know, some of them have got zero, and some of them have got 75%. Correct. The highest score was 75%. The lowest score was zero. Nothing that he said happened. So I went through it again, and I said, well, now how much of this historically has merit? And all of it has merit. Every one of these guys is 100% accurate. What they're telling you is going to happen because it's already happened in the past historically. And there's an old proverb that goes like this. He who is unable to learn from history is bound to repeat its mistakes. Well, Winston Churchill summed it up pretty well. I liked Winnie. He said, most men in their lives stumble across the truth. Most pick themselves up, brush themselves off, and then hurry on about their business as if not much of great import had occurred to them. And he was right. Most of us will stumble across a little truth at some point in our life, and then we ignore it and go on and do business like we've always done. Now, these guys are trying to divine. They're trying to predict the future based upon what's happened in the past. These are conservative writers, and they're looking at Brazil went into hyperinflation back in the 1970s in 5 days. So how long does hyperinflation take to come upon a nation? Well, in most cases, it occurs over a long period of time, 5 or 6 years. Like in Germany, between the end of the war, that's November of 1918, then 1919, 20, 21, 22, 23, and 24. By November of 1924, the hyperinflation was over. They had to change the currency. So it took about 5 years to get up to hyperinflation, which took off in 1923. They had about 18 months of it. It was 23 and 24, ended in November of 24. So, you know, it took 4 or 5 years for it to get up to the hyperinflation stage. Germany is usually looked upon as the bellwether of hyperinflation examples in history. They're not the only one. Hungary's got the record for hyperinflation. Zimbabwe is going through it right now. And have been. In fact, I think Zimbabwe has a new record. They have not repented from their wicked and errant ways, and so they're still struggling along with their hyperinflation. I don't know if they'll ever wake up down there, but the Germans woke up in November and they said, okay, enough's enough. We're broke. Let's start over at zero. In Zimbabwe, then figured it out. The Hungarians, they figured it out. The Chinese, they figured it out. We Americans have been through hyperinflation. We did this in 1783, right at the end of the Revolutionary War. We went through hyperinflation. It ended in 1783, and then we went into a period of the Articles of Confederation from 83 to 87, about 4 or 5 years. And then it didn't work out well, and so the Founding Fathers, they said, hey, we need to get together and figure out another way. And so they came up with our Constitution, and they said, now, based upon the history that we've all experienced between 1694 and last night at 5 o'clock, what do you want to do? So they came up with these 17 words in our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, where it says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. George Washington, 3 years later, wrote a letter back to one of his buddies, and he said, I can't believe the change that has occurred in our economy since we went back to gold and silver. Then we started our mint, got our mint cooking, you know, in 1794. From 94 to 1933, America became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, economically, politically, and militarily. And then we made a change. You know, we started the change in 1913 with the Federal Reserve. We completed the change with House Joint Resolution 192. In June of 1933, withdrew gold from general circulation, and we've been gone away downhill from that point on. There's been a couple of three historical interventions, Bretton Woods in 44, decoupling from gold in 1971. We've been through several recessions, no big depressions yet, but the big depression, I think, is coming on us just based upon history, just based upon here's what we've done in the past, and here was the results that we got from it. Here's what the Hungarians did. Here's what the Germans did. Here's what the Zimbabweans and the Chinese and, you know, everybody that in Brazil and Bolivia and in Argentina, you know, people have been inflating their money, going bankrupt and going through hyperinflation and then depression. It's been going on for thousands of years. This isn't something brand new that just occurred in the Clinton years, you know. This is something that's been going on. And so we conservatives, we look at history as a guide for the future. And we say, oh, my God, look at how bad that was for the Roman Empire when it collapsed in 476. So a guy by the name of Edward Gibbons, back in, I think it was 1776, he wrote a book called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and he listed five causes for their decline and fall. And so conservatives look at that and say, well, my God, then we want to avoid these five causes that caused them to collapse. Then we want to avoid that. We don't want to do that. But we find in modern America today, and indeed in the modern world, we're doing all five of those bad sins that caused the collapse of the Roman Empire. And then we say, well, did the same thing happen to the Egyptians and Babylonians and Greeks? Yep, it did. So then, after having looked at Gibbon's decline and fall of the Roman Empire, and then we apply those five causes, you know, like debasing the currency and turning on their morality and religion and going into graft and corruption and political bribe-taking and gift-giving, you know, we look at those and then we say, well, did the Egyptians do that? Yeah. And what happened to them? They collapsed and went into national captivity. What about Alexander the Great? Same thing. Nebuchadnezzar? Yep, same thing with the Babylonians. Shalmaneser? Same thing with the Assyrians. Has it been going on since then? Yep. Happened to Charlemagne, you know, Henry VIII. All of the great nations and empires from time to time collapse. And so, you know, trying to figure out, well, why and how do we avoid that and so on. And then the conservatives say, well, we need to avoid that, but it runs counter to human nature. The five motivators of human nature, vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. So your politician comes to you and he says, what we need to do is to borrow money. We'll have a bond issue and we'll build you a new school. And after all, that's what you want. You want a new school. You're not thinking about, well, how are we going to pay for this and what's this ultimately going to cost? So when we borrow money to build a school, we just did this here in Gainesville the other day, you borrow $2.5 million for 30 years at 5% interest on a municipal bond, the insurance company comes in and builds the school for you. All right? Well, it doubles every 14.5 years. So the $2.5 million doubles twice. So it goes from 2.5 to 5, and then it doubles again to 10. So it's going to cost you $7.5 to $10 million to build a $2.5 million school over 30 years. You guys could pass a tax issue in place of a bond issue, and then you could go out and pay cash, $2.5 million, build your school. But no, you don't do that. So you want to pay $7.5 to $10 million, and we do that. We do that regularly. Now it spends you into bankruptcy, and the ultimate end of bankruptcy then is national captivity, which follows hyperinflation and follows depression. Now that's what happens over and over and over again. And is it going to happen to the United States? Well, I would bet that that's going to be the end result. All right, now let's go on to another one. Another one over here, a guy by the name of Webots, W-E-B-B-O-T-S. July and onward, things get very strange. Revolution, dollar dead by November. Okay, so let's go here to Webots. Here it is. Number one, July and onward, things get very strange. I don't know what things get very strange means. I put it down. Things get very strange. I didn't notice anything in 2010 that was much stranger than 09 or 08 or 07. Did you notice anything that got strange? Now, if we would have had an atomic bomb drop in EMP, I'd say that was pretty strange. My take on things get very strange is that there's going to be some event like the collapse of the stock market, like occurred in 1987. That would have been pretty strange. Or commodity prices collapse in the year. You know, gold goes down to $500 an ounce or four or three. That would be pretty strange. So I had to give him a zero for the strange, and I didn't see anything strange occur here. Revolution. He said revolution. Just one word, revolution period. No, I haven't seen any revolutions going on. In fact, here in the United States, things have been pretty peaceful. You've got some civil disorder going on in France and England and Germany here in 2010, but I haven't seen much in the way of any civil unrest in the United States or Canada and so on. Dollar dead by November. No, the dollar isn't dead yet. In fact, the dollar went up to 89. And it dropped back down to 80. It dropped for a short time below 80, but it went back up 80, 81, 82, 83. As I speak right now, it's around the 80 mark, 81, something like that. It's not good. Not good, but it hasn't collapsed. And so Mr. Webots over here, he gets a zero. He made three predictions. All three of them failed. All right, now we got another guy here by the name of Neither Corpse. I don't know what Neither Corpse is. Let me see what I've got here. Yeah, Neither Corpse. Here's what their projections are. They have projected that the third and final stage of the economic collapse will begin sometime in 2010, barring some kind of financial miracle or the complete dissolution of the Federal Reserve. A snowballing implosion should become visible by the end of the year. The behavior of the Fed, along with that of the IMF, seems to suggest that they're preparing for a focused collapse, peaking within weeks or months instead of years, and the most certain fall of the dollar. I think I covered that one before the break. They scored zero. They made four predictions. Third stage of the collapse begins in 2010, snowballing implosion by year end, focus collapse peaking in the months or weeks, and then a most certain fall of the dollar. Scored zero. None of that happened. LEAP. L-E-A-P. What did LEAP tell us? 2010, the outlook from a group of 25 European economists with a 90% accuracy rating. Okay, now they're taking this LEAP as a group of 25 European economists. And they have a 90% accuracy rating. So we're going to rate their accuracy here. Here's what their predictions were between July of 2010 and the end of 2010. They said, we anticipate a sudden intensification of the crisis in the second half of 2010, caused by a double effect of a catching up of events which are temporarily frozen in the second half of 2010 and the impossibility of maintaining the palliative remedies of past years. There is a perfect economic storm coming within the global financial markets and inevitable pressure on interest rates in the United States. The injection of zero-cost money into the Western banking system has failed to restart the economy. Despite zero-cost money, the system has stalled. It is slowly rolling over into the next big downwave, which in Elliott wave terminology will be supercycle wave 3, or in common language, the big one, where we all go over the falls together. Okay, now they said that's going to happen in 2010, so we looked at LEAP, and LEAP here has made seven predictions. They said there would be a sudden worsening of the GFC. They said the perfect storm has developed. There will be pressure on interest rates. The monetary injections foiled. The system has stalled, rolling over into the next big downwave and going over the falls together. Well, number one, we didn't go over the falls together. Nobody went over the falls. The economy didn't collapse. Rolling over into the next big down wave. No, we don't have a next big down wave. In fact, stock market and all commodities are up. In fact, it would lend credibility to the mainstream press that says, hey, everything's fine and getting better every day, and that our economy is growing and we're out of the recession and green shoots are greening up, and just be patient, and then President Obama and everybody is pulling the fat out of the fire. Going back to your staterooms, everything's under control. Now, out of those predictions from LEAP, a perfect storm is developing. They're right about that. It's a perfect storm. We have debt accumulating at the rate of $1.5 trillion a year. Even the mainstreamers say that that's unsustainable. So the conservatives, on the one hand, say it's catastrophic, and the liberals say, well, it's unsustainable. So everybody's in agreement. You know, the perfect storm is developing. There will be pressure on interest rates. They're right about that. There is pressure on interest rates, and interest rates are rising. And that spells bad news for government, because, see, all this debt that's coming out, if you're financing it at 1 or 2% versus 5, 6, or 8%, it means the difference between making it or not making it. Now, when is the interest rate going to go up to 5, 8, or 10, or 15, or 20% like it did in the 70s? I don't know. I like to stay away from dates. Is it coming? Absolutely. How do I know that? Well, let me ask you this. Let's suppose that you're sitting here on all this money. You've got $100,000. And you've been investing in municipal bonds, and then you've been investing in stocks and so on. And you notice that in the old days when you invested, you got a 5% return every year. Now you're down to 1% or 2%, but you notice that inflation, that's the purchasing power of your capital, is losing money at the rate of 7% a year. And so you start thinking to yourself, well, gee. Now you take a look at the risk, and you look at California. They're in hock $20 billion. Their tax revenue is going down. And they can't balance their budget, and they want to sell these municipal bonds. And they want you to buy. They want you to spend your $100,000 on California municipal bonds. They're going to pay you 1% or 2% interest. Now, how many of those California municipal bonds do you want to buy at 1% or 2%? Or are you sitting there saying, my God, I'm not sure that California can pay their debts. I'm not sure that I'm ever going to get my money back again. Or in the case of Illinois, they're not even paying their bills. They're just handing out IOUs. And the Highway Patrol the other day, I say on TV, they can't buy gas in the conventional gas stations anymore because the credit cards are no good. Hey, you getting that? You ever heard of the Highway Patrol in any state? Their credit's no good and they can't buy gas in a gas station? So that's the way that game is being played, and you're the guy that's got the 100 grand. So do you want higher interest before you buy those California or Illinois bonds? When do you want higher interest? Is it in 2010, 2011, 2012? See, I don't know, and neither do you. Hey, I'm out of time here, boys and girls. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So, until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.